Hello, and welcome to episode 196 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and I'm here with the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And our hairy little travelling Wilbury, Mr. Tony Esmond.
Right, apologies for this, because I'm only going to do a bit, aren't I? Because I'm in the arse end of Fife, and the signal's terrible, so there's a bit of a delay with me talking to these two bastards. So because we didn't want to miss out on talking about Edinburgh, I thought I'd come on and just like do a bit about Edinburgh, then I'm going to have to go because it's far too annoying when when the laughs don't come for half a second. You know, a little part of my soul dies, you know.
The laughs never come with me anyway. I don't actually know what you're talking about. Yes, so Tony's going to be with us for a little bit this week before we'll shortly have an interview with our guests this week who are good comics, as you know if you follow the Twitter or stuff, but stay tuned for that fascinating look into sort of like the micro publishing world. But you know where you don't get micro publishing, Dan?
On Comic House.
I tell you what, it's seamless, isn't it?
Smooth as.
We're like the Steiner brothers with that attached. Little shout out to
who
wrestling.
Are they
wrestling
in the late 80s early 90s.
Did you see that footage today of Bret Hart taking
Don't get me started. Unbelievable. I can't believe it.
For those not in the know, like Bret Hart was doing like some. He's a wrestler from the 80s doing some Hall of Fame thing, and a fan thought it'd be a good idea to come and tackle him. But what he didn't perhaps take into consideration is like the ring was filled with men over 6'5" tall, heavily muscled.
Yeah.
Who wrestled 24/7 and he got beaten quite badly.
Yep, that's what you get when you're idiots. And anyway, but you won't find any idiots on our sponsors, Comic House. Yes, they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and they've got nothing but awesome indie comics on there.
Yes,
and I've seen recently they've just been adding tons more stuff on there. On their database. And there's a huge selection of titles. If you do comics yourself, you can, and you self-publish, then you can list your book on there for free. When you sell a copy, Comic House will only take 1p commission, and it's another way to sell your book. That's awesome enough. But they've also got an app, which is brilliant, and we love checking out. It's like Netflix for comics, and they're updating it weekly, and the library's just getting bigger. What have they got on there at the moment, Dan?
There's the complete Dracula from Dynamite, which looks absolute dynamite.
I can't wait to read that. Yeah.
Neo-rific, But I'm a Cat Person, Lady Fanny, issue 2 of 6, Surrealsville, and Off My Meds and Other Stories by Matt Burrell, which looks good as well. Yeah.
Awesome. Yes.
All those titles and more on Comic House app.
It's smooth, but there's this creepy element of, does he mean anything that he's saying?
There's... Cynical me wonders.
Yeah. No, Dan loves all comics, and he loves Comic House as well. Yeah. So, and
well, we don't love all comics, do we? We've seen some of the crap that's out there.
Hey, Comic House doesn't have any of that, and neither do we, because we're nothing but positivity on this show. Although there's a topic I want to talk about in a minute that may not be so positive, but we'll get onto that in a second.
I'm going to miss out on that, am I? I might sit and listen to that one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You'll know what it is as soon as we start talking about it, Tony. But yes, Comic House, you can list your book on there, and you can put it on the Comic House app. It's easy to upload your stuff. The Comic House app is only £3 a month for a subscription, which is the price of, I don't know, probably a cheap monthly comic from your local comic book shop. And you get access
compared to one I think you might be talking about in a minute, that is cheap.
And you get access to the huge library of digital indie comics. There's a 14-day free trial and more info if you could just go to comichouse.com. So there you go.
Tony's done a Jon Snow, hasn't he, this week? He's gone north of the wall.
He's gone north
into
of the wall.
Wildlands.
Yes.
Shagged a ginger and gone north of the wall.
Why do you know nothing, Tony Esmond?
Is that Jon Snow? I don't know who these people are. I don't understand this.
You think Jon Snow is the news reporter bloke, don't you?
He's the one who says like slightly racist things on the news at the moment. Didn't he get caught out this week with something?
I don't know. I know that I don't want you to say anything like that on this show.
I wouldn't.
Save it off there.
No, but what you are going to do, you're going to tell us about Edinburgh Comic Con. Take it away, Tony.
Yeah, I went to Edinburgh. To be fair, I was sort of it was between two posts of bit of business and a bit of personal that I was passing Edinburgh. I thought I'll go to that. It sounds all right. So went to Edinburgh. It's a good show. It really is a good show. I liked it. It's a cross between, I'm going to put it as a cross between maybe Thought Bubble and MCM. That's where I'm going to put it. I think because we now table at events and stuff, we're used to not queuing up. So I did find it rather annoying being in the queue surrounded by people.
Diva.
But you know the sort of people who go to MCM. They're, do you know what I mean? Standing next to them for even the 15 minutes I had to. Todd. I found it quite annoying. Yeah, it's difficult.
We're all going to be at MCM in London.
No, we'll be in there before that all that lot.
Yeah, after we'll be inside before the screeching cosplayers there. You know, screeching and running around and saying things.
Who are all welcome at our table if they're going to buy any comics?
If they buy something and come to the table, yeah. I'd sell to bloody Adolf Hitler if he had some money on him, do you know what I mean?
Oh, that's the pull quote for this week, obviously.
Yeah. Well, you showed us a picture of your hall from Edinburgh, and it was mighty indeed.
Oh, you're very smooth today, Dan, even though I'm slightly delayed. It's going very smooth.
An otter.
So there was two halls. There was two halls, main halls. There was one, funny as you mentioned wrestling, one of the halls had a wrestling ring in it. That was the hall that I sort of felt obliged to go into it, Brendan, when I was writing a piece about the convention. So I thought, I've got to explore it all. And I went in there, and it was full of just shite, you know, tails and hats and stuff, mugs. And I remember, I think I put in the blog thing, I picked up a wallet with an Avengers A on it and thought, I considered buying it. And then I sort of had to get a grip of myself and thought, who have I become? You know, am I really that person now? And the BO in the room was like, it was making me gag. It was that bad in that room. You know what I mean? It was sort of lower ceiling, really busy, a lot of people in costumes. There was someone in an inflatable dinosaur costume, stuff like that.
That's a stereotype we're not going to get rid of anytime soon, is it?
We're not, are we? No. The old inflatable dinosaur stereotype. We're stuck with it, aren't we?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
But the other room was all right. The other room, one side of it was all small press. The other side was about four rows of back issues and then mugs and shit, you know. And there was one whole wall of just crap prints of, like, pop culture characters, you know. Yeah. Which I did think, everyone MCM sort of knuckled down a bit on that now, don't they?
Yeah, I did wonder
about that. It was a bit of a strange one. There's a picture of it on the blog if you go and have a look. And there against one wall was the likes of... Mike Norton and all the comics pros, Scott Collins, all these sort of people who were there, you know, really, really good sort of, and they were all sort of, they weren't sort of super busy. You could go and chat to them. I had a good chat with Mike Norton and stuff like that. So most of the day was hung up either buying back issues or chatting to the small press things. I have to say, recent two guests, Johnny Cannon and James McCulloch, were fucking spot on. Like, great company all weekend. We didn't win the award, and I sat with Alan Henderson and James McCulloch at the back of the room just being grumpy old bastards because none of us won. Also there, Bob Turner, he was there. We need to get Bob on, actually. He's really good. I really like Bob's work as well. Really interesting stuff. There was quite a lot of horror comics up there, is the thing I noticed. There's a guy called William Crawford Hazel. I know he follows the podcast, and he's done a book called Eliza Dark, which is, I think you'd like, Vince. It's a Glaswegian horror host female, a bit like Elvira or something like that, who hunts werewolves and vampires. Oh, on a motorbike. So
sounds right up my street.
Oh, I've heard of that. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, you will have seen it on Twitter. Yeah, it's just come out, so I know he's been sort of punting it around a bit. Yeah. He was next to a girl called Bex Tuff. I don't think that's her real name, but
that's
quite cool.
That's fucking great.
Yeah. And she did a comic called Clean. Recent past guest, Joey Oliveira, that was there. Tom and Kate from Frizen Comics, a chat to them. Steve Tanner from Time Bomb. Adam Faup, who he and I both travelled 420 miles to discover that we actually live 5 miles from each other. That was quite cool. I got to have a bit of lunch with Demetrius Zach, who did The Man in the Gutter. Do you remember? He did that comic that I reviewed. I really like his stuff. I know Marrow did a really good interview with him, I suppose about a year ago now, maybe. And he gave me a bit of art from that art challenge thing we did. That was really good. And he also gave me a Greek version of Dylan Dog. How cool is that?
Uh-huh. Oh, nice.
Yeah,
you love a bit of Dylan Dog as well, don't you?
I do, yeah. Steve Ingram's, I was going to talk about his comic at the end of the show, but I'll talk about that next week, maybe. Alistair, who's a listener who does a review site called Daredevils and Warriors. He mentioned us on that very kindly this week. Sloth Comics. And John Farman, who does Vital Publishing. And I bought a couple of comics from him called Generation Gun. I like the Scottish scene. You know, I was chatting to Tom from that comic Smell earlier about it. And there's no... We're very tribal in London and in the South, aren't we? With our sort of little gangs around what comics... cons we do, who we mix with, where we do signings and stuff like that. You know, there's maybe two or three sort of groups, aren't there, sort of tribes.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
and up there there's not really that divide. Everyone sort of knows each other. They all appreciate, I mean, James had a girl next to him who did erotic male gay comics, porn comics sort of thing, and he was sort of saying how great they were. And then you got Stephen Ingram, who does sort of quite introspective kind of stuff, which would be more akin to the Gosh Comics crowd, maybe, you know. Yet he was, you know, chatting to everyone. It was good actually. It was a real sort of inviting, sort of inspiring scene, I've got to tell you. Really good. You put up with the cosplayers and the lunch boxes and you know, all that sort of thing. Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, I have to say, I'd recommend it, actually. One, if we had enough dough, we should do that one, because it'd be good for us, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That really like the sound of it. I mean, all the people are going is absolutely, like, top tier as well. Yeah.
I went to the pub with Alan, Bob, and Johnny Cannon afterwards, and it was just good. It was just, like, hardcore talk comics, you know, hardcore art collecting, past artists kind of talk for a couple of hours. Like, brilliant. Loved it.
Awesome.
Yeah, nice one.
So that's definitely one to obviously next year look out for.
And, definitely.
Yeah, we'll see if we can pull some strings to make it there or something. We'll see.
Yeah. All right, guys. We're sorry it's quite annoying, this delay. I'm going to go sob somewhere. I might have a curry, actually.
Don't do that, Tony. You know what happened. I warned you on social media, and I warn you again. I only care about you, Tony.
I've got to tell you, the hotel I'm in at the moment, if I vomited in it, it could only improve it.
Oh, Lord.
Nice. And on that
bombshell, say hello to the Good Comics guys for me.
We shall.
And I'll look forward to listening tomorrow.
And Tony
and
will
I'll
be,
just be sobbing.
Yeah, and Tony will be back on next week's episode. So,
okay.
Yeah. So tell him you love him online, et cetera.
Yeah,
please do. Or just come over my hotel room. It's room number 8 at the... Yeah, no, I won't say where. Love you.
Take care, Tony.
Bye. Yes, so Tony Esmond has left the show, but he will always be in our hearts, won't he, Dan?
Of course, yeah. it never feels the same when one of us is missing.
No. I know what you mean. You know, we've all got big shoes to fill.
I enjoy listening to the show more when I'm not on it, I've got to admit.
Oh, if only I had that luxury.
Yes, you don't. You never missed one show, Vince.
I know.
If there's no Vince, there's no show.
Well, no. One day I'll tell you how to do it, just so I can swan off to Vegas. But I tell you one thing I don't want to miss, and that is your opinion on a book. Now, it was making waves on social media. It certainly made the waves on our Facebook group and WhatsApp group, etc. This week's new releases on New Comic Book Day saw the release of, let's say, a titan of the comic book industry, returned to the Marvel Universe. That titan, no matter what you think about his work, past, present, future, whatever, you can't not say that, you know, he's a modern legend, let's face it.
Left his mark, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously we're talking about Mr. Rob Liefeld. And he came back in Marvel, and he's done everything on this, hasn't he, apart from colouring? He's written
I believe so, yeah.
Yes. And what was the title? What's it called again, Dan?
As in Major X.
Major X. It's made some waves in our little community. I haven't read it. But
when he picked it up initially and started sending us pictures, it was like, oh my god! And we kind of it started popping up in the group, and it was a bit of a car crash scenario. And I was like, oh, got to get in on this, and bought it on Comixology.
So you bought it full price on Comixology, didn't you?
Yeah,
you
went for the digital. I can't remember how much that cost.
That must have been about $2.99 at least.
Yeah, it's about £2 or £3.
Yeah, and what are we talking? If it's a Marvel book, probably 20 pages of artwork. Or is it? It's not a bigger issue, I don't think, is it? It's just a standard issue, isn't it? I think
it won't tell me how much it is because I've already bought it. But yeah.
But yes, obviously, whether you follow Marvel or not, obviously, I mean, you can say that this is news. This is big news. Obviously, one of the Image founders coming back to Marvel again, which Rob Liefeld has done with. He's done a lot of covers and he's done some Deadpool stuff, I believe, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean they've. A lot of like Jim Lee did some. I'll probably be called out for that. I'm not sure if Jim Lee has done some stuff, but people who have gone to Image have gone back to Marvel and done bits and bobs, haven't they?
Yeah.
Over the time.
So looking at the Comixology, this could be a 6-issue miniseries. $2.99 was issue one. And how do I put it bluntly? It hasn't been well received.
Yeah, it's weird you say that because I looked on Twitter and I looked up Major X and everyone seemed to be saying how great it was. So I don't know.
But okay, let's break this down because, you know, I do want to be fair about this because I think just because of the Liefeld name, it's easy for a lot of people to just jump on, isn't it? Or make judgments or things like that. And certainly I'm guilty of it. You know, off the record in the WhatsApp groups, we do have these moments of, Jesus Christ, look at this. You know, yeah. I'll hold my hands up and say it. But this is him creating a new character for the Marvel Universe, in the X-Men universe, isn't it? And from what I see of the cover of issue one, it's him going back to characters. Well, Cable, is it, I see?
He's got Cable, Wolverine, Deadpool, of the original.
There's a Dark Beast as well, isn't there, or something like that?
Yeah, he's kind of like a... I think Hank McCoy from the future.
Yeah.
So he keeps on calling McCoy or something.
Okay. So before we get, and we're not doing a play by play review of the whole thing.
No.
I don't know too much about it, but it just interests me. So what
have you read it, Vince?
I haven't read it. This is why I want to see. So what is, I mean, take away, you know, the criticisms of art or, you know, all the bits you liked and don't like, but what's the story that's told in issue one?
Well, it's a story you've read from Rob Liefeld dozens of times, really. It's like a story of someone traveling back from the future to kind of warn or stop some grand calamity. There's sort of a bit of a mystery. And whenever I've read a story that Rob's done like that, it's never resolved, ever. I can't think of one. I can remember several Youngblood storylines starting up like that. Some X-Force, New Mutant stuff, and just doesn't go anywhere. And it's just the same. It's the same stuff he was doing 20 years ago.
Yeah,
it's really kind of. I don't know. I can't really hate on him too much because I find frustrating with that guy because he just doesn't seem to change and just does the same thing.
Dan,
I'm honest.
You broke up a little bit there. Obviously, obviously, Rob's on the call somewhere.
I just find it kind of broad, and he's just doing the same stuff as he's done for 20 odd years in the industry, and it's just no different. And it's almost literally no different to what he was putting out. If anything, some of the stuff he was putting out 20 years ago when he was doing like the New Mutants into X-Force is better than this. So he seems to have kind of regressed. In some respects.
Yeah. Now, obviously, that doesn't sound... That seems like standard sort of Marvel sort of character bit, isn't it? You know, you got a new character. Whenever the new characters turn up, that they've obviously turned up from probably the future or a different dimension. That seems to be the go-to these days, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Rather than anything else.
He comes back and says, oh, no, this terrible thing's going to happen if we don't stop this, blah, blah, blah. And he sort of... farts his way through Cable and Wolverine.
Cable, who's looking very well, he's indescribable.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he was looking older when Rob was drawing him 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, like, yeah. Supposed to be an older man, but in this he looks like he's sort of he's in his 30s, 40s, and just kind of quite spry. And
Yeah, I
don't know. I just, this whole comic's just brutal. I mean, we had a good laugh about sharing the images and stuff, and it's like they pointed out, like, he's got this, the carrots have a grimace, and like most of them have the same expression through the entire thing. It's just very sad. Yeah. I won't be getting the second one. I mean, I paid for the first one, and I had my fun out of it and had a laugh, but it's like, I won't be getting any more of this. It's just.
I mean, with that in mind, would you recommend people, if people don't know what you're talking about, would you recommend people to do what you did, just buy the issue to see what, you know, the fuss is all about?
I don't know, because we were sharing it back and forth, having a laugh, I got my money's worth out of it. But if I bought it like just on the bounce and read it, I was like, this is terrible. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Don't want to be another person kind of hating it.
Yeah.
There's nothing here.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see how, because it's a 6-issue series, it'd be interesting to see if you read the entirety of it, let us know if it's a satisfying conclusion or if you enjoyed it. If you know, if you love this stuff, then, you know, more power to you. So it's all good.
Fair play.
And you know, people may jump on it, but you know, Marvel have asked for him to do this. You know, they've clearly, you know, they're the ones that have paid him. They're the editors. It's all gone through a process. It's not like he's just jumped on there like, yeah.
I find it, it's kind of exasperating in some sense when I read some small press titles.
Yeah.
And just how accomplished they are.
Yeah.
And I can't believe like Marvel's putting out stuff like this.
Yeah. Some people will sort of say, oh yeah, Marvel are paying him God knows how much for this, blah, 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 blah. We don't know all that. We really don't know, because let's face it, he's probably a guy that, I mean, I don't know, and maybe he's got a gambling problem, but I don't think he's got, he doesn't have to worry about money so much.
I just think it might be like this, the first issue is mad, and then it might go downhill, but I've got a feeling that prediction won't be right. I'm sure it's going to be going crazy.
This first issue is probably going to sell loads because people will be interested in it, and it's got us talking, so, you know, what do we know? Yeah.
The 6 issues are done this year and done on schedule, I'd be absolutely blown away, completely surprised.
Oh, yes.
I'm surprised if it gets to the end of the run, if I'm honest.
End of the year, we must make a note in our diaries, either us or the listeners of the Awesome Pod, to remind us. Let's see if Major X made it. When we get to our end of year show, if it makes it, we'll give him a special award just for that.
I mean, looking at the artwork, he's like, over the recent years when I've looked at Rob's stuff, back in the day he used to do a lot more rendering himself, but now they're very kind of simple figures and he leans a lot on the colorist to add detail and stuff to his work. So as I've mentioned before, I just find him incredibly lazy and sort of a bit undisciplined and just churns out the same stuff. That's why I find so frustrating. Like, all the fight scenes are the same.
Yeah.
Straight on flat shot of someone getting punched. The rear shot with the head flicking to the left or right. And
I think it has the covers of all 6 issues on Comixology. I'm looking at them now. Some of them don't have the title on them, but from the looks of it, there's absolutely nothing that you haven't seen before from him. Like, no backgrounds, floating heads, just things going on.
There's one where he's got the, I think it might be for issue 2, there's like the 3 characters with their arms sort of up beside them, like L shapes.
Yeah, and Wolverine's got the longest claws I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's hard to get a reaction from me because I don't know what the fuck to think about this one.
And I'll say, no matter what people say, I think it'll be they've done it as a 6-issue mini, and probably if it doesn't do anything, then it'll just be forgotten, because how many 6-issue miniseries do these big companies do that no one talks about by the end of the year?
How many futures have the X-Men got now? Like, how many alternate futures?
I don't know. But however many there are, there's always someone who's willing to go back in time.
I don't like time travel story. I've mentioned this before on the pod. I don't like them.
Yeah.
And I think generally they fuck things up.
Yeah. Well, what sense do you think?
Once time travel is introduced, all jeopardy goes out the window.
Yeah. And you have to have an element of, like, it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could go back to the future and just sort of say, well, if they did this, surely the present would change, blah, blah, blah. But if you think about it too much, you know,
yeah.
Why think about it too much? Time travel doesn't actually exist. So,
yeah, it's kind of just one of those things you start questioning yourself and then the reader questions stuff. And then before you know it, you're kind of, well, I've got no problem. Like, Back to the Future is fine. But once you start asking questions about it, it kind of, oh, really? Like, you know, the bit where the first film, even Marty changed it. So, his dad's a bit more confident.
Yeah.
And when he comes back, his entire life would be based on memories that he wouldn't have. And it'd be completely different.
It would be completely different. It'd take a while you'd to have do a psych- it. You'd feel like you're in witness protection or something, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But time travel is something that, unless I'm mistaken, I haven't seen in the small press or indie scene too much.
Maybe, yeah. No, I can't think of a title.
I can't think off the top of my head. Let us know, listeners.
I mean, maybe there is Terminator. I don't mind that kind of, I don't know, even that, like, it's moments, but it's kind of just the simple concept that this thing goes back and then away you go.
Yeah,
still time travel, I guess.
Yeah,
but
you know, it's all timey-wimey.
I'd probably
say Doctor Who's the closest you get to it in a lot of comics, isn't it, really? But that's not independent. So if there's some sort of time, and we're talking about time travel comics,
yeah.
If you hear
a good one, send it in or let us know.
Yeah, yeah, and if you know of any cool ones that we need to check out, then let us know as well on the Twitter or an email or whatever. Because I'd like to say it's a possible topic for a future show, but we can't think of any other indie books at the moment that do it. So
do time travel now.
Yeah, yeah. So prove us wrong, because I think that would be an interesting debate. I mean, it'd be confusing as hell.
Just cut the. If I say something bad, we just go back and then I'll redo it.
Be like the butterfly effect of podcasts. Yes. So
Tony wouldn't like this, talking about meta stuff.
But yes. Anyway, I just wanted to talk about that bit because I've seen on our awesome comics talk there's been a bit of talk about it. So. Yes, but back to this week. For you now, we have our talk with the micro publisher Good Comics, who joined us to have a little chat about their work and the stuff they do. So without further ado, let's get stuck into it and talk about some indie comics. Here you are. This week, we're joined by a group calling themselves a micro publisher. But they're surely destined for big things when you see the library of quality comics and books that they're building up. Plus, on their social media, they say, our comics are good and we like dogs. So what kind of world would it be if we didn't talk to them? We are, of course, talking about Good Comics. And we're very pleased to be joined by Sam, Rosie and Paddy. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
Hey, yeah, thanks so much for having us. It's really nice to be here.
I love it when people say that, Dan.
Yeah.
It feels like we've put them up in like a nice hotel, isn't it? Maybe sat in the green room.
I thought this was promised. Where's the hotel?
So that was Good Comics. See you next week.
It's interesting. We were just talking about dogs before we came on.
Yeah. It's all sick.
It comes up quite often.
Now, first things first, before we get stuck in, Tony Esmond says hello.
Where are you this evening?
As our lovely listeners already know, he's had some technical issues, which has caused him to... I mean, off the air, he was swearing like a trooper, wasn't he, Dan?
But he was. He was very frustrated.
Yeah.
Poor Tony.
Yeah. But he still...
We made a Game of Thrones joke, and I think we got over it.
Yeah.
Even though he doesn't get that.
He didn't get it.
Was it that Game of Thrones is a joke?
Wrong crowd. They're just going to hang up on us.
Sound of chairs being scraped back.
If nothing else, you might have lost half of our audience. All four of them? No. But as we've got you here, I want to find out more about this. Now, what do you mean by micro publisher? And because normally when we think about independent comics, you know, you see all these different companies doing this, and it's not wasn't until I saw that you called yourselves a micro publisher, I thought, what do they mean by that? So how do you think that makes what you do different from other companies out there being like a micro publisher?
I don't remember us ever like consciously making the decision. I think it was.
I only started using MicroPublisher because you'd already been using MicroPublisher, so I was just like, yeah, that's a thing.
We definitely didn't. I can't give you the origins of why we decided on this, but I think it ties in a little bit to how we conduct ourselves. We're not attempting to be a big publisher and grow bigger and bigger. We just, most of our stuff will get printed and it'll have a finite print run, and then we move on to the next thing. We're not trying to build things up, and we're not trying to, you know, rule the world of comics. We're just we're trying to do it on a slightly lower level and be
a stepping stone for people to go on to further things. Yeah,
we're not trying to make mad dollar.
Because obviously there is mad dollar in comics.
Oh, just the maddest. I mean, yeah. If you could see our mansions, Dan, it'd be amazing.
Honestly, I think when we were setting up the Twitter account, we needed a word to describe what it is that we do, and I'd seen that used somewhere else, and I was like, that kind of fits. Yeah. And maybe now that we have quite a lot more books out, it's maybe not necessarily true, because at the time we had like 2 books out, and I was like, well, it'd be arrogant to call ourselves anything else.
Yeah,
that's quite that's quite interesting. But does it? I guess with your way of working, it ties in, because, like you said, there's a finite print run of books, isn't there? You're not constantly looking for reprints and stuff. So when there is a good comic book, you know, what is the run of that? You know, how does that happen?
How do we put them together? So we've, for the most part, when we started out, we were kind of asking people if we could work with them for the most part. So the origin of Good Comics is that Paddy and I were both making comics ourselves, and we wanted to table at a convention, but we didn't feel like we had enough pull to do it each individually. So we decided we'd come up with a name and put it under that so that we could have a table together. Essentially, it wasn't really for anything other than that. We decided to put together an anthology called Dead Singer Society, which is the first actual good comics thing that was done. And so it was kind of just for the purposes of us having a name to put ourselves under at shows. And then it kind of snowballed.
Yeah, we didn't necessarily have like a grand plan. We were like, well, let's collaborate on this anthology and then we'll just kind of see where it goes. But while we were tabling, then we talked about it and we said we would like to kind of publish other people's stuff and make a positive contribution to UK comics and build up the scene and all these kind of things. But yeah, we just kind of took it as it came, really,
because that's quite an interesting and I think big step to, rather than just printing your own anthologies, to then just sort of say, let's publish other people's work that we don't, because you don't so much have too much to do in that, in like the creation of it, you're just sort of publishing it, I guess. Is that how it works?
Yeah, so to begin with, we essentially just saw some people's work that we really liked, and they were people who weren't necessarily going to be putting that stuff into print, and we felt like they needed a bit of a push to do it. So the first 2 books that we did were the James Howard's Chicken Boy, which
love
is a big collection
book.
Of
that book.
Yeah, I think people love putting that love that book as well, and we liked all of the illustrations, and we pushed James to kind of collect it up and put that in a book. And the other was Robin Scott's Every Life I Ever Lived, which is his like diary comics from over the course of like 3 or 4 years, and he had done hundreds of them, and we collected the first 100 or so up into a book. So the impetus was kind of, let's give some people that we think are making good work, give them a bit of a nudge to put something out into the world.
That must be brilliant these creators. For instance, Chicken Boy, that was pretty much a lot of illustrations that had a life of their own. I know Chicken Boy's got quite a bit of a following online. Yeah. I think I even did a draw of him once, I think, for James's birthday. I think lots of people said it. Yeah. So for Chicken Boy itself, you just literally approached James and said, have you got anything that you want, you know, is there any potential in publishing Chicken Boy?
Yeah, I think we just kind of had a chat with him. Like, we won't ever lie and say that we're super professional about this stuff. Most of the time we just say, hey, this is a cool thing you're making, fancy putting it in a book? And that's kind of how it always ends up working. So with James, he was someone who I think Paddy and I had both had a bit of an online relationship with and been following his work for a couple of years. So it was just quite a casual thing of like, we think these should be in a book. Would you like to do that?
Yeah. And that of course was the first one. So, you know, have things changed in the way that you approach people, in the way that you talk about things? Because with every book, you learn from every book that you publish, you know, no matter what it is across the board in comics, isn't it? You know, what are some of the like big things you've learned about dealing with creators as a publisher yourselves?
Do you want to say something, Pay? I don't.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think.
Oh, thanks.
What you learn is that every is that every creator is different, and I actually hadn't really thought about it that much because it's been very steady for us. Actually, we haven't had any like huge flops or anything. We've been very, very lucky. Obviously, some books have sold more than others, but you just learn that every creator has to be taken as they are, and you have to collaborate. You have to understand who they are and what they want to get out of the process as much as what we want to get out of the process, and to see it as a collaboration. But actually, more recently, kind of this year, since we've redone our website, we've actually like opened submissions, and with some of the stuff that we're doing going forward, we are working with people editorially more. So we're looking at stuff earlier in the process. Okay. So rather than going to someone like James or Robin, where they've already got all this stuff and it's basically there, we're actually looking for people who have stuff that we can go and say, actually, maybe we think this story would benefit from this, or these pages here, or these kind of different lines or lettering or whatever. So we're trying to do a bit more of that and trying to get more involved in it, which is quite interesting and new for us, just kind of to be sort of mentoring people in that way as well. Now that we have a bit more experience, we're also keen to share that with people going forward. So I guess what we've learned is also how to work with people editorially as well, even though we're doing that more now than we were, where people had complete works, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think also part of that stuff is that we have found that the best projects and the smoothest projects have been when they're people we get on with and they're people whose work we kind of really believe in. And when it's someone that you get on with personally, like, that's the biggest part of it. We want to help people further their sort of career and give them some confidence to carry on making comics. And you know, we're not signing people in to carry on making comics with us. We want to give them a platform to make stuff and then go on to sort of bigger and better things.
So have you had people apply to sort of get published by you guys that you're completely unaware of? How does kind of that relationship kind of build then from that initial email where they contact you saying, hey, I'd like you to publish this?
I think it's starting to change. Like, we, in the last 6 months to a year, we've been putting a bit more effort into working with people that we don't already know, or creating opportunities where we can meet and talk to new people that we didn't otherwise know. So part of the process is that we're being a bit more involved in what they're doing, what they're making, but also, like, you know, having conversations with people and, you know, getting to know them a bit and finding out what they want to do and what they're trying to achieve with their work. So the most recent book that we're in the process of doing is by an American guy called Moha Kalra, and we have spent like 2 or 3 hours on Skype calls just chatting and talking about what he does and what his background is and what he's attempting to do with the work and what the impetus for it is. And in the process of that, we're kind of getting to know him and getting to becoming friends with people and knowing how they work. Like, I think it's important for us to find new people and develop new creators, but it's also really great to build that into the community and having people that we get along with and can get behind their work.
Yeah,
we always like to connect with people personally as well as professionally. You know, we don't just see it as kind of a business thing. It's very much about the community.
Yeah, which especially with small press and indie and stuff like that, you have to embrace it, don't you? You can't sort of be above it, especially like you call yourselves a stepping stone, which I think is quite interesting. Not many people would necessarily call themselves that, even if they consider, you know, openly call themselves that, even if they consider it. But it does seem to me that you're very much on the lookout for new voices. You know, a lot of the stuff that I see in the Good Comics lineup, I haven't, you know, even if these creators are out there somewhere, I haven't necessarily heard of them before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that actually goes back to the question you were asking about how have we developed and what have we learned. And actually, that's actually probably the main thing that we've learned over the last few years is actually that is kind of our place in the market and the community is to be that stepping stone. We have had conversations in the past where it's like, do we try and go huge with this? Do we try and get like loans and quit our jobs and make this everything that like make this the biggest thing ever? And it's like, actually, we've done quite well being this stepping stone thing so far. We know we can do that and we're good at it and we're passionate about it. So why not keep it that way, at least for now?
Is that also like an effort to keep things manageable? Because like if you had like a range of 50 books, then going to a convention and keeping control of stock and stuff becomes an ever increasing sort of task, doesn't it, really? Do you
100%, yeah.
Do you see, I mean, even though you've got a growing lineup of books, is there a point where you have thought, right, let's slow down a bit now. Let's push the stuff we have.
Yeah, I think every time we lug a suitcase to a convention, we have that thought going through our head. Every sweaty walk through a town centre with a box of books.
Also, I think I think last year ended up being a year where we brought out like 6 or 7 books and we were like, oh shit, yeah, we need to... need to chill out a bit. And like it just so happened that projects that we had kind of been talking about or working on just all ended up coming out around the same time. But yeah, like I said at the start, a lot of our stuff has a finite print run and it has a finite life. So really the turnover is probably a little bit higher. Like we don't always carry, like when we do shows, we don't always have a bunch of any of our older books, especially the ones that have sort of done well over the years. It's just a case of we are now finding our voice, finding the thing that we want to do, which is develop new people and like we said, be a stepping stone for that. So it's, you know, it's a case of us doing that and by concentrating on the new work that comes out.
And there is a Good Comics following now, isn't there? I mean, I think the importance of Dead Singer Society can't be understated because, like, you know, I know so many people that have read and loved that book.
Yeah.
You've done, is it 4 volumes of that? That's how many you did, isn't it? Volume 4 was the
last one.
Yeah. And that obviously built up a following, and that was a unique voice in itself. Mm-hmm. But now that you have this ever-increasing sort of library of books, people will now look for Good Comics, won't they? Do you see like repeat customers, you know, people you recognize from different conventions coming to your table?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's really nice that when even overseas people who are interested in our books, when a new book comes out, they'll pre-order it because they know that what we bring out is good and that they enjoy it and they're interested to see what's next, which is always really, really nice to see.
You've also made a rod for your back by calling yourself Good Comics.
Well, there's a genius idea behind this, which is that we're not saying that we're anything better than good, and we're not saying that we're anything worse than good. We're essentially saying that we are passable.
But we're not calling ourselves excellent comics or
and I'm guessing we call
ourselves amazing awesome for my podcast.
You guys have made a rod for your own back.
Well, you know, if anyone listens to it, they know that it's a lie. So I'm guessing passablecomics.co.uk was already taken.
.com, .ca, .tv
Yeah. Couldn't even register it in the Cook Islands.
A Nathan Barley joke.
Well done.
The thing is, I want to quote Nathan Barley, but some of it you probably couldn't say in this day and age.
No, and if you had just seen Rosie shaking her head, you would know that you shouldn't.
The beauty of a podcast, you can't see my disapproval.
But it was weird. I felt it. I felt the hairs.
Yeah.
Oh dear. But back to your sort of lineup of books. It's interesting because you're putting out, like you say, 7 books in a year. at one point. Is that what you said? You launched
seven? Yeah, I think it was six or seven last year.
Yeah. And that brings up the interesting topic of marketing these books, yeah, because obviously you're putting out new stock and new books, which is brilliant, and there's all these, you know, was it seven individual sort of like new creators as well as a couple of anthologies?
No, so we had
one would have been Dead Singers 4.
Yeah. One was Dead Singers 4, one was The Good Comics Reader, which was a little charity anthology. There was, I don't know. The Times I Knew I Was Gay was the big one that we brought out.
Yeah, that was huge.
He's at least sort of, I don't know, they kind of blur in together a little bit. 2017 and 18 just felt like one really long year.
Yeah.
Or is it like Moon count as a Good Comics one, or is that all you?
That's all me.
I'm trying to take credit for your work.
Yeah, she shut that down quick.
It's not just good. That's
bad. Wow.
But when you put out like that many books, you know, whether they're anthology and stuff, you have to sort of focus your attention on getting the word out about each individual title, isn't it? Because you're not focusing more on one book than another. So how do you balance getting the word out as well as, like, you know, getting these books into, like, I don't know, Gosh, etc.? Is that quite difficult?
I think we're fairly well rehearsed at this point, and I think, generally speaking, they don't come out all at one time. So, you know, or we try and time them with shows or stuff like that. So there's we're normally promoting at least one book at a time. I think, yeah, I don't know. We have a pretty good system with getting stuff into shops, and we do really well online, especially with pre-orders, because I think more and more people understand that that's a thing that's important for small outfits like us. So, We tend to do pretty well on pre-orders on most books. We give it a good push. We're trying to do more, like, we're recording our own podcast, and we started the new website, so we're trying to do a bit more stuff through that, like previews and interviews and stuff like that. So I don't know. We've never really we haven't had any absolute bombs ever, I don't think.
No, I don't think we really have a good strategy. I mean, I've kind of come to it, obviously, not fairly recently, but I don't think there's really a good strategy that we've had in the past. It's more just tweet a bunch about it and then.
And send our review copies as well. There's quite a few key people within the community, like yourselves, and Tony especially, who will always happily give us quotes to put on the back of our books about how fucked up they are, which is always good.
I mean, it does seem to be, for my perspective at least, the art of it is the marketing. It seems to be like, if you've got that cracked, you can do really well, but it's very tough. And some comic creators, small press, who do that as a job, seem to absolutely excel at it.
With my own work, I've tried the heavy marketing tactic of going on about it all the time, and I've tried not going on about it all the time, and they seem to bear the same results. I think the problem is at the moment is there's an influx of too much information, and Twitter is all algorithms, and Instagram's all that, so you don't actually see recent stuff unless you go into some effort. It's all top tweets or whatever. It's actually quite hard to market. I think people are more interested in a personal response than hard-hitting marketing. So I think we just go with being incredibly charming and hoping that that will bring in the bucks.
Yeah. I think Rosie was talking for herself then, I think.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I'm out there, you know, 4 hours a day following and then unfollowing as many people on Twitter.
Making sure Amino Acid Boy is following.
Jesus. But I think we know our audience as well. We know who we're trying to get to. And actually, as you say, the comics community is relatively small. So actually, like, when we're putting out a new book, you know, we have a fairly engaged audience already. Not that it is all just an echo chamber. I think we are still reaching more people each time we put out a book, because each creator has their own network and that kind of thing. But it's still, it's all about these kind of small niche networks, I think, rather than some kind of elaborate marketing plan.
There's a lot of a sort of a word of mouth system that sort of works very, very well. I mean, certainly with a lot of your books, you know, I've heard about them from so many different people before I've checked them out myself. Do you know what I mean?
That's good to hear.
Petrichor is the latest one that I picked up at Cardiff.
Yeah.
And you know, we know Gareth Hopkins on this show. We love him. He looked after us when we were at the first London Super Comic Con. So we're essentially family. But I heard so much about Petrichor, you know, before that made it a book I have to have as part of my collection. You know. So
yeah, I think part of that as well is the people that we work with are very passionate about what they do. Yeah. And small press comics, you kind of have to be, but there's also a certain amount of people being quite public about moaning about the workload and stuff. But it was the people that we work with are very passionate about what they do, and they want to shout about what they're doing, but also in a quite humble way. Gareth especially is very humble about his own work. And it just makes you want to read it.
I also think it's about being part of the community. Like we don't spend all our time on Twitter promoting our books, but we're kind of just trying to engage with people who we like and whose work we like. I personally spend quite a lot of time looking at other people's work, and if it's something that I like, then I give it a retweet, I comment on it, I tell people that I like the work. And that's not because I want people to come and buy our stuff, but it's because I want to be engaged in the community. And so I think part of it is that, like, we have a lot of conversations with people online. Like, I especially, like, when I'm at work, I have it open in the background. I hope my work's not listening. You know, like chatting to people, talking about what they're doing, what their work is like, and them being engaged on what we do. I think we're not trying to sell all our comics to a bunch of people. If they break even and we can make a bit of money for the creators, then that's great. We're not trying to like sell gazillions.
Take over the world.
Yeah.
Oh, sounds a bit threatening.
You're not meant to tell them.
I mean, obviously, Rosie, like you said, you've come into it sort of fairly recently to become sort of like part of the publishing scene with Good Comics. How has that experience been like for you to go from just a sort of sole creator to then moving into this sort of publishing side as well?
Yeah, it was kind of a gradual process. I did do some editing and work for Good Comics over the past couple of years, and I've done shows. We've shared tables where I've helped Paddy out or helped Sam out on occasions when the other couldn't attend. So I have kind of been involved for a while, but there comes a certain point with my own work is that I was creating a lot in a very short space of time, and I burnt out quite quickly because when you have something that does quite well, there's the pressure to keep making work and keep getting people enjoying it and that kind of thing. Whereas when I started doing some work for Good Comics, it's a different kind of gratification in knowing that you're helping other people. And I'd like to think I have some sort of knowledge about comics that I can impart onto other people. So the current book that we're working on with Moha, Novelty, I've kind of been able to guide him a little bit with turning it from something very screen-based into how it would look in book format and how the page turns will work, and editing it and getting him to add in some extra content or move things around slightly that would really benefit the book. And that has been really, really positive. Like, I really enjoy doing it. And it's just, I still want to make my own work, and I still do, but it's a different side of things, which is very engaging, and like Sam has said quite a lot, it's part of being in the community.
Sort of gives back, you know, when you're interacting with other creators, that inspires you a bit more for your own personal work as well.
It just inspires me in life. I mean, life's too short to be in a very insular sort of narcissistic circle. I'd rather reach out and help people or have conversations with people and bounce ideas and work in collaboration, or it's just more engaging to me than just being in a very small vacuum. Not literally.
not inside a Hoover.
I think as well we're all very different creators, and that when we're doing like editorial work on a book, like you say, or we're thinking about who we're going to publish or whatever, actually our different sensibilities do complement each other. But even just down to the technical ways that we work, like Rosie paints all these beautiful landscapes, whereas I I scratch at the page with design pens, and Sam is really good with using like brushes and colors and stuff. And it's like, we actually all are all very different. We have different approaches to comics, but they all work well together.
We're actually having this conversation at the weekend at the Lady Z Comics Festival, and we were, Paddy and I were talking about the differences in the way that we work, because Paddy loves writing but doesn't so much enjoy the drawing part because it's kind of torturous. I, on the other hand, hate writing things. Like, I wear it as a badge of honor that I've never written a comic script in my life. But I enjoy the drawing part of it. I only really enjoy the drawing part of it when I know what I'm meant to be doing. So Paddy and I are actually like working on doing some stuff together. But that's that idea that we kind of can look at it from all the different angles. Like, I think I look at comics differently to these two guys, and we all have a different sort of perspective on them. So that being part of the creative process for other people from an editorial point of view is really positive, I think.
Yeah.
So do you, would you mentor people individually depending on what kind of project they brought forward to you guys?
Yeah, it's a fairly new thing, I think. I'm working with Moha's been the first time that I've done it. I don't know about
Olivia Sullivan, her book Sid was kind of like that. I was quite involved in it sort of coming together, but she did sort of just presented me with work and I critiqued it. But then I think the first time we really did it was actually when we did a book with Rosie, which was the first time that I took an editorial role, and we were talking about things in process and making changes and stuff like that. So it is a fairly new thing, but yeah, that's what we're aiming towards, is that there's lots of people out there with really amazing work that have really great stories to tell. Like, I've read a couple of scripts and extracts and stuff in the last week from people, and they're really, really good, but there's also a little bit of refinement that could make them really great. And that's something that we'd really like to do, is just use the skills that we have and our expertise, and like just our having done this for 4 or 5 years, like what we've learned from that and what works and what doesn't work. And
so you've had the opportunities to put like writers and artists together on projects.
We haven't really done that so much.
No, I don't think we've ever done that.
Most of the people that we work with is generally people who are, you know, doing the whole thing,
wearing the hat of all trades.
I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't, apart from working, like me and Paddy are trying to do a bit of that because it's just good for both of us. We haven't really done that, and I wouldn't be averse to it. It's just it's that idea that sometimes, because a lot of the work that we put out and a lot of the work we're interested in is kind of emotional, personal, not just sad stuff, but, you know, like it's that the kind of stories that are being told from one person's perspective. It's the kind of stories that are, you know, kind of auteuristic. The idea that someone is putting all of their feeling into the page. So I think a lot of the work that we do doesn't really suit that kind of writer artist setup.
Yeah.
Because fair enough.
And it's an extra level of sort of people management as well, isn't it? I mean, I guess if you know, a writer and an artist come together and create a very personal work and then come to you, it's a different sort of kettle of fish, that, you know, because, you know, it's essentially the book's already there, isn't it? That you can work with them on that level. But to actually sort of pair a writer with an artist or with a letterer, etc., that's another level of sort of project management that would take a lot of work and a lot of time, isn't it?
I don't think we'd ever write it off. It's just that it's something that's never really presented itself to us. I think, as Sam said, it's largely to do with the type of work that we publish. But I don't think you find much fairly emotive, semi-autobiographical work that is separate writer.
It is sort of like a one-man band kind of a sort of style of a book.
If someone did approach us as a team, it would definitely be an interesting perspective, and wouldn't What are you going to say?
Sorry, I was just going to say I've realised as we're talking about this that there is a project that we have in the pipeline that is written by one person but has five different artists on it. But we can't sort of say too much about it at this point. So
look forward to see how that works.
But that project has very much come from a perspective of someone has been getting, you know, been working to put a book together over a couple of years. Yeah. And the way that the book works is that it needed five different artists because they're all kind of five different short stories. So that's been again presented to us by the main.
Yeah,
main person.
So the writer is the one that's sort of done all the legwork of organizing all the artists and stuff, and then you're just helping guide it in the sort of publishing phase. So with what you just talked about in mind, with the sort of like personal books that you've done, how do you guys sort of, you know, choose what kind of book or project is appropriate for your sort of library?
I don't know that there's a definitive answer for it, because I think a lot of it's about feel. It's about like we've never produced something that we didn't all agree on. Like, I know for a big part of it, it was just Paddy and I, but I think we all have a pretty good feel for each other's sensibilities and the stuff that we like. And when stuff gets submitted to us, we all tend to kind of talk about how we feel about it and if it's something that we want to get behind and pursue. So it's less about whether it fits and more about whether it's something that we think is an important piece of work or a piece of work that we want to get behind.
Yeah,
and I think ultimately it does come down to personal preference. Like, there are just things that we like, and you know, if we don't like your work, whatever it is, that doesn't mean that it's no good. It's just that we don't like it.
Yeah.
It just might not be appropriate for you guys to publish it, but it'll do well somewhere else, sort of thing. I mean, but at the same time, you're not saying you're adverse to like a science fiction story, say, but it could still work within the wheelhouse of the things that you guys like publishing. If it's done the right way, then you'd be open to other sort of genres and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if you look at Human Garbage by Josh Hicks, is a collection of his that we put out. It was actually stuff that he already had sort of done for other anthologies and stuff. And we approached him and said, would you like to do this collection after a tip-off from Robin, actually? And there's a story in that, which is like a straight-up sci-fi story, which is written by another guy whose name I'm blanking on. But it's one of my favorite like little comics ever. And like stuff like that, where it still has a kind of sensibility of stuff that we like, where it's telling a great story and getting a great story across, then yeah, if it's science fiction, we're totally open to it, for sure. It just so happens that what a lot of the stuff that we have either wanted to do or that people have approached us about haven't really been like that, I guess.
I think looking at something like Gareth's work is a good example of that. Like, there is a world of abstract comics that I do not know a lot about, but I know that they exist and they are out there. And it's not something I would have personally gone out of my way to look into, but Gareth's approach to storytelling in that medium worked for us. It was a thing, like, it's not an easy sell to people. Like, a few of our books that we've put out are definitely not an easy sell to the casual reader, but they were things that we felt were good stories. And it's not necessarily about the packaging, but more about what the story is and whether it's something that connects.
I think Gareth's work is an interesting one as well, because like I say, I heard good things about it. I wanted to pick it up. I was aware of his style of work, but it's definitely Petrichor. I mean, I thought it was a stunning book, but it's definitely one that if you just pick up and look at a couple of pages, you're not going to get it as such. Because it wasn't until I read it cover to cover in one go, I had heard people talk about, you know, how it made them quite emotional in some ways. You know, it really provoked sort of feelings and emotions. And there was part of me that thought, you know, the cynical brain that thought, well, you know, I'm tougher than that. Yeah, I won't worry about that. And as I was reading it, it really does, before you know it, it's drawn you in with like the sort of the words and stuff. And that, it's astonishing. I think it's important for people to try work like this as well, isn't it? You know, to really sort of push it out and try something different, because you never know what you're going to get from it.
Yeah, totally. I would say that when I was aware of Gareth's work for a while, and I remember him sending the book to us, asking if we'd be interested in it, and my first reaction was, I'm not sure that this is going to be the sort of work that we'll want to put out. But Paddy and I both read it within about an hour of it being sent over, and we both said, yeah, no, this is exactly the sort of thing that we want to be doing. And we sometimes do have reservations about things, but then we find out a bit more about the creators and a bit more about the project if it's not the full thing. You don't always know straight away if it's something you're gonna
you can never truly judge a book completely by its cover, even though some covers are shockingly bad.
This is true.
We were just talking about that just before this, weren't we?
We're positive as much as we can be.
It's overrated.
But okay, because obviously, as well as like making the comics and publishing them, you guys read a lot as well in your spare time, I guess, whether it be comics or books or whatever. What kind of books do you all read? And are there any titles that may surprise people to know what you read based on the output the Good Comics does?
Like, I don't know how much people know about Paddy and I and our baseball fanaticism. So yeah. For the last few months, I've basically been reading baseball biographies.
Yeah, same.
Well,
that's quite a niche area.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been a baseball fan for a long time, but I've managed to successfully over the past sort of year to 2 years to convert Sam to the Church of Baseball as well. And Rosie's kind of on the way. And I have a column at a website where I review books about baseball. So that's actually like a big thing for me as well.
Where can people find this column?
It's a site called Bat Flips and Nerds. It's a UK baseball website, but they let me write about books. So it's cool. Sometimes there are comics. Actually, the next one I'm going to review is called "Striking Out Satchel Paige Striking Out Jim Crow" by James Sturm and Rich Tomasso, which came out of the Center for Cartoon Studies in Vermont, and it's their like graphic biography of Satchel Paige, who is a famous black pitcher in baseball, and that's an amazing book. Like, I love James Sturm's work so much, and that might not surprise anyone because he's great. But yeah.
I think reading a lot of biographies are quite interesting to do in comics and sort of novels, aren't they? I mean, I think I should. I mean, I haven't really read too many sports biographies. Have you, Dan?
No, I don't think so.
No, I know there's an Andre the Giant one floating about.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got that. It's by Box Brown. It's so good. It's honestly, he's one of my all-time faves as well. But he's just got a book out about weed as well, which looks really good.
Oh. What, the marijuana? We don't talk about that one.
The marijuana, yeah.
Anymore.
I just reread an autobiography about a Crip gangster from LA called Monster Cody Scott. That's a read.
Oh, that's amazing.
That sounds good.
What led you to read about that, Dan?
I can't remember. I think I picked it up or someone gave it to me and said, I've ever read of this. And it was kind of out of my wheelhouse, but I did give it a read. And you know, I was laughing at things you're not supposed to be laughing at. It was just...
That's our Dan.
Yeah.
I genuinely think that comics is a great medium for biography, though. Like, it genuinely works really well. The other Box Brown book that came between those is the Tetris one, which is about the guy who created Tetris.
Oh, I've heard about that.
And that's amazing.
So good.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to read that.
Kind of got done over, didn't he? He basically didn't the Soviet Union at the time just take the rights to the game from him, and correct?
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. But I don't remember what the question was because I derailed it by talking about
what books do you read?
Dickie's Nasty Knuckles.
I actually know some behind the scenes things that you do watch. And Rosie, you know what I'm talking about here. Two words for you, Air Bud.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
So our other podcast, apart from the Good Comics podcast, is the Big Boys Don't Bunt which is Pardon? Where we big boys don't bunt. It's a baseball thing. You'd have to ask these two because I'm a bit hazy on the details.
You say that, but we were watching a game yesterday and Rosie went, was that a bunt?
I'm learning on the job. Yeah, we do a podcast about reviewing baseball movies.
Which is great fun. And Air Bud is one of those. Or Air Bud 7th Inning Fetch, which I think is the fourth installment in the original Air Bud franchise. So
I thought it was the seventh for some reason.
The Air Bud cinematic universe.
Do you think that's the one where they jump the shark, or is it still the gritty realism of the previous Air Buds?
It's not the original dog because he died.
So it was pretty gritty.
Yeah. But the original, so the first film is about Air Bud, who is a dog that played basketball. And it's not a true story, but the dog in the film is really playing basketball. And the guy did genuinely train his dog to play basketball. He was like a veteran of the Vietnam War who trained his dog to play ball or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What came first? The dog that played basketball or the Air Bud script?
No, the dog came first. That's why it's an amazing story. And this is the kind of stuff the stories that we want to be telling in comics, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Did you say baseball one was the fourth?
I think so. It's the third or fourth. So it goes basketball, American football, and then baseball, maybe? Or maybe it's the third.
Air Bud Spikes Back, which is the volleyball one.
Yep.
Isn't there a football, as in soccer football one as well?
Yeah, World Cup.
Because the idea of hearing a story about a Vietnam vet who comes back then trains a Labrador to bounce a basketball sounds like an interesting story to me.
It's like Lieutenant Dan.
I'll tell you what, Dan, you write it, I'll draw it, we'll publish it with Good Comics.
We'll take it.
Sold.
Yeah, very up for
I hope you're ready to be millionaires.
So obviously you guys have stepped into the podcast game then, so how have you found that?
It's all right. We don't really know what we're doing, or I don't. Paddy does.
I already had a podcast called Big Boys Don't Cry, which is why we called our podcast Big Boys Don't Bunt. So my podcast Big Boys Don't Cry is a weekly film show about romantic films, and we just did our 100th episode, so we've been doing that for like quite a while.
Is it a different film every show?
Yeah. No, it's the same film every time.
Oh, that'd be amazing. if it was just 100 episodes of How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, I would listen.
We did that film about episode 25, I think.
Oh, right.
What was the film for the 100th?
It was Under the Cherry Moon. Have you ever seen it?
No, I've not.
So
heard
it is one. It is Prince's directorial debut from 1986, and it is awful. I can't recommend it enough. But actually it really goes back to how we've started doing the Good Comics podcast, which I've been too busy to actually appear in any of the episodes so far, so Sam and Rosie have been doing all the hard work on that one doing stuff and on the periphery of comics or in a different medium, but that is related to the medium, and to actually making a contribution to the community through a different medium is also a very good way of doing marketing, as we were talking about earlier, but also, just doing something different.
So there's lots of sort of content that you guys are putting out in any way, every way, shape and form, isn't there?
With the new website, we're also doing something called Good Fridays, which is giving new creators an opportunity to put a short form comics online. So we haven't had one for a few weeks, but we've got a few in the pipeline for just short form comics that are being posted.
You're onto a gold mine with that name. Good. Good on everything, yeah. You could probably take M&S to court over Goodwood Food.
I used to work at M&S, and this was back when they had the adverts that were like, it's not just food, it's M&S food. And it had Albatross by Fleetwood Mac playing on the advert. And there was like a TV at the end of the till where I used to work that played that advert on a loop. So now if I hear that song, I just want to scratch my eyeballs out.
He just flies into a rage and kills multiple people.
Bloody hell, is that the word that will set you off? It'll just activate the sleeper agent and then...
I could never play golf for that reason.
So what have you guys got coming up for the rest of 2019 then?
So the only sort of semi-announced book that we have is the book called Novelty by Mohar Kalra, which will be out in the summer. We are currently working on a bunch of smaller projects that will hopefully be out throughout the year. Like we don't have a big lead time on our stuff. We just say, is it done? Yeah, cool. Okay, we'll send it to the printers. We're not very organized in that sense. So but apart from that, there isn't anything else that we can talk about because the only other big project we have hasn't been announced yet.
So people just need to stay tuned to your sort of Twitter and social media and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if people absolutely have been following us for a while, they know how we work. It's very sporadic.
They know that they have to listen.
Slightly organised way.
Listen to a load of bollocks in between.
Yeah,
and then
exactly,
see that there's a new book coming out.
Yeah, I think, like I mentioned before, kind of slightly jokey, but 2017, 2018 were incredibly busy years, and they both kick-started very early for Good Comics. Like, I wasn't officially part of the team then, but I was standing by and watching. And we had a lot of books come out quite early or have in the pipeline very early when it was a lot. So this year it's worked slightly differently. We've obviously changed our website, which has changed how we're receiving submissions and pitches from people. We did a presentation at Ladies Do Comics Festival last weekend, and we've received a lot of positive feedback from that. So we're kind of collecting and collating and looking at what we have at the moment and then looking for a kind of plan moving forward for the rest of the year.
And we met some interesting creators there, so there's maybe some potential projects that will come out of that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
Awesome.
What about conventions? What have you got any conventions lined up for the rest of the year?
We only have one, but that hasn't been formally announced yet either, because it's a new one.
I've seen that it's got an Instagram account, so it has.
Okay.
Hackney Comic and Zine Fair.
There you go. Hackney Comic and Zine Fair is being run by Joe Stone.
And that's in the summer?
September, I think?
Oh, late
September
summer.
September 2019, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a bit of a quieter year so far. We've done a couple in the past month, but apart from that, I think we're keeping it a little bit lower key just because of the time, and Paddy's about to be a father and all this exciting stuff. So we're trying to keep it a little bit closer to home rather than, again, lugging large quantities of books around city centres trying to find where the nearest McDonald's breakfast is.
we've all been there. what about your work, Rosie? Are you going to have anything else coming out this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been working on a panel a day for about a month now. I've got quite busy doing some stuff with Good Comics, and life took over a little bit as well as a boring adult stuff. So I decided it would be a good way to try something different instead of planning out a big script and then doing everything in a very methodical way. I thought I'd just throw caution to the wind and do a panel a day comic about rocks, which is far more exciting than it sounds. So I'm working on that at the moment, and I'm thinking of maybe just doing a real DIY printing of that, but I'd like to bring something out this year. It'll just be a little bit later on, but I'm quite enjoying experimenting a little bit more. We've got a risograph printer who does our some of our good zines and is going to be doing some of our work going forward, so I'm interested to bring something out in that format, something a little bit different. And I've got a big book on the back burner, but it's going to be a couple of years before I think about bringing that out because you know, time.
You don't want to rush any sort of book or project, really, do you?
As I said before, I released a lot in a very short space of time, so I'm quite enjoying letting things sit. I've got a good audience of people who will always buy something new that comes out. I'm very lucky that people really like my work. I'm happy to kind of sit back a little bit, enjoy the editorial process with Good Comics. I'm doing some blogging for Good Comics as well, which is quite fun. I did one about Bristol, and I'm looking to do sort of one a month going forward, doing the podcast, watching Air Buds. Like, there's a lot of good stuff happening.
Important stuff.
Yeah, that isn't directly bashing out a bunch of work. So I feel pretty good.
Awesome. Awesome.
And I'm learning to skateboard, which takes up quite a lot of time.
Oh, okay.
Wow. I think she's just outed herself that that's the most important thing in her life right now.
Yeah, she was saving it to the end. She was like, and I'm actually learning to skateboard, so the rest of it's shit.
Yeah. I'm doing the Vans tour at the end of the year, but that's fine as well. So basically, folks, stay tuned to their social media and their website and stuff for latest news. So where can people find you, like, on social media and online, etc.?
So Twitter, we're @good_comics.
Yeah. On Instagram, we're @ourcomicsaregood.
And then the website is goodcomics.co.uk.
Because we want them to all be so different that it's really hard to find.
Yeah. Because we had a really good marketing plan in place when we set up all our different accounts.
Well, you're doing awesome work. You're putting out great books, and I know a lot of our listeners are fans of your work. So keep up the good work. Every pun intended there. And thanks for joining us this week, guys. You've been absolute legends.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
We hope to see you at a convention sometime soon in the year.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I'll be kicking around.
There you go, folks. Weren't they great? They should change their name to Great Comics, because they are actually doing that. Very humble, but thank you very much to the Good Comics guys for joining us. You missed it. We had a bit of a conversation about coffee before we actually started recording.
Yeah.
Which I'll see if it's appropriate for Aaron. It might be in the outtakes. Because Dan, you've had a bit of a coffee challenge, haven't you?
I threw down the gauntlet. Yeah, we was discussing in work, as you do, talking absolute bollocks when you should be working. There was someone who was reading an article about how, like, having X amount of coffee is bad for you, and I think the number was 14. So I said, right, tomorrow I'm going to do 14 coffees. And I started early, about 7 a.m.
Are these sort of standard mugs?
Just standard mugs of coffee.
Yeah.
And I got to about 3 p.m. and I'd had 7. And it wasn't right. Like, you can get that pervading sense of doom when you have too much caffeine. But I was just like, this ain't right. My body is not liking this.
Sometimes if I have too much coffee, I get a headache. Do you ever have that? Did you get a headache?
No, I didn't have that. No.
You just thought you were going to soil yourself. Is that what
it was? It just felt like it was kind of like everything was surging forwards all the time. And my heart rate was going like a fucking hummingbird's. And I thought, I'm going to have to stop.
Jesus. Do you have sugar in your coffee?
No.
Bloody hell. God, thank God for that. Otherwise, you may not be with us now.
Yeah. It's the only fucking thing keeping me alive, the coffee.
See, I so wish I was a coffee drinker, because I'm not, you know, coffee connoisseurs out there try all types of coffee, but I'm an absolute savage. Like, you know, sometimes I like it, but it's got to have enough milk to make it look like a tea and enough sugar in it that it's essentially a pudding. So
there's a place near me where I work, the Monmouth Coffee, and you have to queue up to get it. It's not like he's kind of the brand thing. I think they might have one or two shots, but fucking hell, the coffee in there, it's like you have one cup of that and everything else tastes like shite afterwards. It's so good. Oh. It's just great. But, anyway,
from coffee to shout outs. If you want to bring us a cup of coffee when we're at MCM.
Please do.
London. Then please do, especially on the Friday, because we're going to need it.
Trying to get out to that the shop is difficult enough, and their queues are mental. I've been looking into buying myself a massive thermos for coffee all day.
One thing I will say about you, Butcher, is, and I experienced this at True Believers, you are like the MacGyver of, like, or Bear Grylls of supplies at a convention.
Bring loads of supplies.
It was wonderful. It's like, I really feel as if someone cares for me.
I do care. I was giving away cake bars to people and crisps, drink. Yeah.
Yeah.
People need that stuff, you know what I mean?
They
come
do.
On.
Yeah. And Dan Butcher is a very safe human being. You don't have to worry. If he's offering you cake, he genuinely means it.
Also, they were individually wrapped, so I cannot have interfered with them. So you can forget about that. Don't take that off your mind.
Oh dear. But there will be no cake on the 4th of May this year, but there will be episode 200 Yes.
Yeah.
We're all going to meet up. All three of us are going to record in the same room for episode 200. We're going to keep shouting about it until the actual day arrives. And God knows if it'll work. We think it will. It's going to be fine. It'll be fine, won't it, Dan?
Yeah, I'm going to try and not drink too heavily on the day. I'm get to a point where I'm just like,
are you actually going to drink?
Yeah, I'll probably drink, yeah.
Oh, right.
So I don't want to get fucking slaughtered because otherwise it'd just be the worst.
Yeah.
We won't be able to put it out.
I will probably be the only sane person there, probably. Surrounded by carnage. But yes, it is episode 200. We are going to be at the Two Chairmen, 39 Dartmouth Street, Westminster, London, SW1H9BP. We're going to be there on Free Comic Book Day. So I know there's a few people out there who will go out to get free comic books. Mm. So you can do that and then pop to see us afterwards and chill out and hang out with us. We'll be in the upstairs bar area. We've got that whole area for only the coolest people, isn't it, right, Dan?
Us.
And we'll be there from 12 till 5, and we'll be recording the episode between probably 2 and 4. So yeah, if you can make it, please do. We'd love to see you. We've got some badges, special badges we've had made up for those that can make episode 200. We've also had a lot of requests for badges for those who couldn't make it. So if you can't make it, we'll see you and give you a big hug the next time you see it, and we'll probably sort out some other kind of badge. Well, you know, we love you all. But yeah, we're looking forward to it. We know there's going to be a few people coming already who are making the journey, and we truly appreciate it because this is it is essentially just us having a laugh for an afternoon with some like-minded people. So if you can, please join us. If you can't, just
it'd be good to talk comics with people as well, because obviously we've got that space for a fair time.
Yeah.
So turning up and talking comics, I imagine that's going to happen quite a lot. That's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the actual show itself is going to be a loose sort of Three Amigos show. We get, you know, if you want to ask us a question for that particular show, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Ask us whatever you want. God help us, but we might as well, as it's episode 200.
Yeah.
Send it there. I will collect them, and the guys won't know what the questions will be. So I will ask them live on air on the day. We're not going to stream it live because we're not that technical. So
don't Facebook ask, live it.
Yeah. But something that was streamed fairly live was something you wanted to give a shout out.
Yeah, it was on Tuesday night, I believe, wasn't it? Behind the Curtain, episode 4. So you do a podcast about comics. Who doesn't? Fair Spark Books, hosted by Aaron Rackley. Yep. And you had, who do you have on? Tom from That Comic Smell, yourself.
Yeah.
And Nikki and Ian from the Lakes podcast.
Yeah.
And it was great. Really enjoyed it. I do like that commenting thing. I was actually doing comic book stuff on the computer, and I had like one ear in listening to it, and I'd sort of flick back to the screen and forth.
I was so glad I couldn't see the comments, because that would have put me off. And I knew Aaron had to deal with all that nonsensical trolling that people were probably trying to do.
It was too bad. I mean, I look back at the fucking one I was on, and there was like a lot of shit going towards.
Yeah, I would have given you support, Dan, but I was appearing on another podcast that night. I've been on loads this year. I don't know.
Yeah, why. I mean, we've done the Comics of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Did you do the Lakes podcast earlier this year?
Oh, that was last year, I think.
Was it last year?
Yeah, I think that was last year. Yeah. I say it on every show I go on. It's always strange being on someone else's show. Do you find that?
Yeah, it is. It feels you're kind of giving up the reins.
Yeah.
You're sitting back a bit, and the emphasis is not on you to kind of drive it along. You're a passenger.
Yeah. So, mind you, saying that, if people that listen to this show know that we don't drive it very well.
No. But I'm sort of drunk and with head in the footwell, pushing the pedals in my hands. Tony's in the passenger seat trying to do the gear. Just driving from the back seat, leaning over.
Are you essentially saying I'm a back seat driver? That's cold, man. That's cold.
No, I think you're well in the front seat. Maybe like with your shoes off and you're trying to use the steering wheel with taste.
Is it a convertible? Come on, we've got to have a convertible.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Or are we like the gangsters from the Wacky Races? Is that what it is? Please, 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 someone send us fan art of the Awesome Comics podcast Wacky Races car. That would be amazing.
So you got any more shouts?
Bits? I don't think so. This week, it's going to be another classic week of we'll hang up, I'll go to edit and suddenly realise all the things I should have said. So, yeah, stay tuned next week for me probably remembering forgetting what I should have said. But
no, I always think, oh, I'll talk about that on the podcast and I don't write it down and then it rolls around and I can't fucking remember anything.
Yeah.
You did the other day with the script. You think of something, it's like, oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah.
And then like the next day I didn't write that down and I can't remember it.
Yes, I had a moment this week where I had an idea for a story in probably the 30 seconds. And this was like a new story, a new sort of concept. In about the 30 seconds before I actually just went unconscious and fell asleep. Yeah. And I think my last thought was, this could be really good. And then I fell asleep. And thankfully, when I woke up, I remembered it. That is a rarity because how many times have any of us out there had an idea for some sort of storytelling idea before they've fallen asleep? I know people say, you know, they have notebooks by their bed. That would never work for me because whenever I wake up in the middle of the night or whatever, I don't know where I am.
Yeah, I've kept a piece of paper and pencil by the bed, but it's never really worked out.
No.
You write something down and you read it. Oh, that's a lot of bollocks.
You have to wake up and be really lucid in order to do that, don't you, really? And normally I sort of wake up and just think, my first thought is, oh, what fucking time is it?
I've seen the other night I did that thing where you dream and have like an argument with your other half and you're really pissed off with them. And then you wake up in the morning and I've still got those feelings of resentment, but they haven't done anything. And you're just like, got to sort of reconcile the fact that you shouldn't be in this bad mood and they haven't done anything wrong.
I truly hope that doesn't happen between you and me at MCM, Dan. That'd be horrible. Why is Dan being so grumpy with me today?
Yeah. Am I being grumpy with you? <No. 'cause... laughs> Honestly, after every time I'm doing a con, the nights between or before, I'm so fucking knackered and out of it. There's no fucking dreaming going on.
I have been told blitzed. From Joe that after every convention, I laugh to myself in my sleep.
Really?
I just lie there and go, so I don't, I mean, I'm asleep. I don't believe it happens. I've never heard it. Do you know what I mean?
But, no. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's obviously, I'm guessing it's a sign that I've had a good time.
You've had a good time, yeah.
Yeah. Although it's probably terrifying. Lying next to someone that's just laughing to themselves.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any experience like similar. Nah, never had that.
No.
Never had it. Usually they're drugs, so they don't say anything. That's the obligatory Tony joke there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, the back of the van is fairly comfortable, isn't it, Dan? So.
Yeah, there's a mattress in there.
Oh, it's still dark. We'll still go there.
Yeah,
we'll still go there. It's that time of the night. Yes, and it's also that time of the night for us to recommend something for you, lovely listeners. It's just the two of us this week, but Dan, I'm looking forward to yours because you have something you want to bring up.
Blast in the past. The Aliens comics. I can't remember what this run in, but there was. I always remember the day there was a guy who'd done like. Airbrushing the Aliens comics, and his imagery always popped up over the years. And I did a bit of a Google search on him, and they'd used his artwork for the Aliens arcade game. Do you remember that one in the 80s? He played as Ripley and Hicks, and it was like a
side-scroller
shooting. Yeah, and they used his artwork for the sides of the cabinets and stuff. And his name is called Denis Bivou, and he is fucking an art beast.
Is he the one that, I may be wrong here, but I always remember, I haven't read too many Aliens books, but there were some classic ones that I remember, where there was a guy dressed in sort of a white, sort of a...
That's the one.
Naval, he's got like a cap, hasn't he? And then an alien tongue goes through the top of the cap, doesn't it? He's got like sword or a chain sword or something like
He's got like a flamer and a sword, and he, in the story, I can't remember his name, is it Spears? He basically thinks he can recondition the aliens and get them to do what he commands. And basically the first thing they do when he leads them out is they turn on him and eviscerate him. But the cover for the book two has got the aliens like standing amongst flame, and they've got these numbers painted on their heads. And it's such a striking cover and great art throughout. So, like, the first book, I bought both these second eggs. I think they're both out of print. First one was some Titan, which is black and white artwork, which is standard enough. And then book two is published by Dark Horse, and it's just, the art in this is absolutely fantastic. I can honestly remember reading it at secondary school and being blown away with it then. And looking at it now, it really holds up. I didn't actually know what happens at the end. Ripley pops back up and says, oh, we're going to go and kick some ass. She's got about 50 weapons duct taped together.
Yeah.
And it's essentially in the story, like, the aliens have taken over Earth and it's absolutely fucked. And just there's like a few human settlements sort of still remaining, but everything's sort of devastated and they're going to try and go back and do something about it. But
I mean, in the 90s, if you wanted your alien fixed, Dark Horse was the place to go, wasn't it?
Really? Yeah.
Not that I read too many of them, but I remember when I was looking at Wizard or, you know, going to a comic book shop, because Dark Horse and Predator were the big ones for, you know, they were Aliens and Predator were the big ones for Dark Horse. So, you know, and they always did the, I mean, the covers were always phenomenal. I felt that sometimes when you opened up the books, the quality, you know, you kind of expected to see that sort of cover quality inside, which we all know, we learn that isn't always the case. But, you know, when you're a teenager, you think, oh my God, if it looks like that inside, I have to buy that. And it's not always the case. No. But yeah, Dark Horse were always churning out loads of alien books, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's real dark content as well.
What made you want to reinvestigate aliens?
I think someone popped up some of the guy's artwork on the Facebook group saying, remember this? And I was like, oh yeah, fuck me, I remember this dude. And then I looked it up and it was like, it was republished in the book two. And I thought, well, I can jump straight into the book two, but I thought I'll get book one first and then two. The first book is like the artwork's kind of serviceable, just like relatively standard black and white sort of artwork. It's not crap. It's not amazing. It's just kind of just what it is.
Yeah,
I'm doing a bit of a disservice there because it is all right, but like when you put it up against the second one, it just absolutely blows out the water. I was saying, I was mentioning a bit of a bone I had to pick with it because Aliens Book One is Aliens Book One. It's got Aliens Book One on the spine. Aliens Book Two has got Book Two on the front, but Volume Two on the side. So
how did that slip through?
How did that get through? That's fucking outrageous.
I mean, it may seem like a small thing, but when it's on your shelf and it could be one of those little things that you just never stop noticing.
I mean, it doesn't bother me ordinarily, but I had to leave the Amazon reviewer one star because I can't let shit like that slide.
Yes, Dan Butcher, he lives his life with a cursed, like a scorched earth policy. You cross him and it's just one star all the way.
But yeah, seriously, I'd have to track down what this guy's done. He's got like, I did look at his website and it looks like it was designed in the 90s. Like, it's absolutely awful. Oh. It really needs a redesign. Yeah. It's got one of those things, you know, when you scroll down and like the menu bit stays with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. It's... Yeah.
Well, you know, those brilliant sort of artists that maybe not so many people know about ties into what I'm going to talk about in a minute. But
nice one.
I think Aliens, do you think they've got all of them on? They must have all of them on Comixology or whatever, if it's part of the Dark Horse line or something.
Yeah, they must do. Yeah. Let's have a quick butchers while we're on it.
And I know they've... Comixology always does sales, doesn't it? I've seen them have epic alien sales, but I do think maybe I should check out some more modern sort of alien stories. I know past guest Rob Carey, he's currently, is that just finished now, his aliens series?
I think so, yeah, because he was saying he's got like some time on his hands, and it was just, his work's absolutely fantastic,
absolutely stunning. So yeah, that's a series I need to get. And I know James Stokoe has worked on one as well that looks absolutely amazing. Anyone who knows his work,
it's outrageous, man. Like the book I'm looking at, this Alien, the original series, Volume 2, they've got it going for £15.50 on on Comixology. So you can pick it up. You can pick it up in print. I picked mine up for print for like £6.
Bloody hell.
So, overpriced that.
Yeah, I think that sometimes they overprice them so that when they go into
it
the
is
sale,
out of print.
Yeah.
Like, there's still copies floating around out there on eBay and Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, so go seek it out. And we'd like to hear more. I mean, I think we should do a show do a topic show about those sort of licensed movie comics. I think that'd be quite interesting because
I do remember reading the Terminator Dark Horse ones and loving them.
Yeah. See, the Terminator wasn't one I read, but I read a lot of Predator ones. There's mixed quality all over the shop with a lot of these licensed comics, aren't there? So
yeah.
So definitely seek those out. And as I was saying, the artist I wanted to talk about was Ian Kennedy. This is partly a shout out as well because Gary from Comics Anonymous, that great website, he was at Dunfermline Comic Con, and Ian Kennedy was at the show, and Gary very kindly said, I know, because I when I saw this book exist, was about to come out, I said, oh, I'd love to get my hands on a copy of this. And he said, oh, it's going to be at the show first. Do you want me to pick up a copy? I am eternally in his in his debt, because I got it this week, opened it. It comes with, it's a wonderful sort of oversized hardcover book from Heritage Comics. Haven't so much heard of them before. They must do some classic sort of collections sort of stuff. And this is an art book from DC Thompson, because this is celebrating 70 years of Ian Kennedy's artwork for DC Thompson. And you may not know who Ian Kennedy is, but I guarantee you, if you see some of the painted images, and he was mainly a sort of painted artist, you'll recognise it. You would have seen it somewhere. He's had such a long and storied career, and the quality has never failed. When you talk about consistency of how good this guy's artwork is, and it's certainly one that I took for granted when I was a kid, because you'd always see it on comic covers. But now I'm at that sort of stage where, art books and seeing this classic art, I've got a new appreciation for it. So when I saw this book and I had to snap it up, I still haven't sort of read it because I've spent most of my time just looking at the glorious art. And I know I sent Tony and Dan some images of some of the interior pages.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I posted them on Twitter as well, just a couple of spreads. Don't want to show it too much because I think this sort of book you have to see for yourself. But it's a really well put together book as well. It takes it from the beginning of his career, takes you from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000 and beyond. There's a great interview. There's a foreword and introduction that's pretty decent. A bit about the man himself, and I know there's quite a lengthy interview with him that I'm looking forward to read, because Gary's told me that the interview's cracking as well. And all of this is interspersed, they've designed it really well. There's wonderful sort of black and white artwork from when he did comic strips and stuff. You see his early stuff, Wizard in the 50s, and these are books that I'm totally unaware of, do you know what I mean?
Me too.
And then it just works through to even strips like The Blind Bowler, which is a cricket comic. And then it
any baseball ones?
Yeah. Well, I think, who knows? He may have. And if he doesn't know, the good comics guys would be on it. But people will probably know him for most of his work with Commando, which is, let's face it, an institution. I think it's an absolute institution that, I know it's still going now, it's still going strong, but not enough people talk about. I will say that. And I say this as a person who isn't reading it. Currently, but they're still going. They're still reprinting stories.
I used to read it a lot as a kid.
Yeah. I remember my nan used to have a huge collection of sort of Commando comics, and when we my parents went around there, she'd have this big bookshelf full of these little square sort of comics, and I'd just pick out and just look at the glorious sort of colours,
nice.
And I'd borrow some, and there's some really dark stories in there as well. they don't pull any punches. this art book, It's great the way it sets it out. You get a couple of pages sort of dedicated to all the different strips he's done, from sci-fi to World War II. You have things like Smasher, which has a giant robot, to Matt Braddock or Target. One of the ones that really got me was Target Crete, which is and it tells you what it's from. The cover is from Commando number 1478. Just take that number in mind, folks. Target Crete was from 1981. You see a lot of bombers in the distance, or these planes overhead, and all these parachute regiment dropping down. And in the middle of it is a sodding great Minotaur. And I have no idea what this story is about, but I want to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, as it goes on, you see some sci-fi stories. There's some Star Blazer stuff. Did you used to read Star Blazer, Dan?
Yeah, man. I really wish they'd reprint some of that stuff because I used to love Star Blazer.
Yeah. And, you know, as soon as I saw some of those pages, you know, I can imagine you, you know, seeing that sort of cover artwork. And it is glorious stuff.
Yeah.
Ian Kennedy is an absolute legend. I think in the UK scene, a lot of us talk about 2000 AD or things like that, and as well they should. But if you love English comics and you love that scene, you need to check out more of Ian Kennedy's work, because it's untouchable in its quality, and it's nice to see a book like this do it justice. And it is very much an art book. It's not. What I liked about it is when it goes from different strips, they don't clutter it up with too much text. It is the art is the king here. Let's just show them lots of brilliant, you know, clean scans of these paintings. And they show you, like, paintings without the cover, you know, title and stuff on the logo and stuff.
Just the artwork.
Yeah. But you do sometimes see that you see his sketches that he's actually worked in where the title's going to go.
Yeah.
And then you see the final piece. It's just beautiful. The Art of Ian Kennedy, the book is £40. So it's probably one of the pricier sort of art books that I've ever got, to be honest. But art books normally are quite pricey, aren't they, no matter what they are.
Yeah. It's because they're used, like, premium quality paper, and it's all great finishes on them.
Yeah. But like I say, it's about 160 pages of absolute fucking joy. And it's going to be my art book of the year. It's going to be one of my books of the year. Plus, I know a lot of you will understand this. It smells glorious.
Yeah.
It's got that lovely,
can't beat that smell.
Yeah. And when I got it delivered, it had like a little sort of paper aeroplane in it. You know when you used to buy those little aeroplanes that you could cut at the wings and slot them through the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it had one of them as well. Cause
oh, nice one.
One thing that Ian Kennedy could do, he could draw vehicles like nobody's business. Effortless. So, definitely check out The Art of Ian Kennedy. I will recommend it to everyone that I know. And I'll probably post some more pages. And also, Gary got Ian to sign it and Stay Awesome. He's written Stay Awesome in the book. So,
hey, nice one.
So now me and Ian are like best friends for life.
Best buds.
So keep an eye out for that one and the Aliens books and Good Comics, who were brilliant this week. So thank you very much again to them for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed this show. Tony, we hope you enjoy the show, don't we, Dan?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Tony will return.
He will return next week and we're not going to announce it yet, but we got a bit of a name next week.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's a name when they're on our show, because we love them all. But a bit of a classic sort of creator in a lot of people's eyes. So stay tuned for that. And if you want to get in touch with us, ask us questions or ask us where episode 200 is, or whatever you want to know. There's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicpod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod, where, as I say, we'll be letting you know who the latest creator is. We won't do a poll. Tom, did you hear Tom Curry?
Yeah, I saw that.
I laughed.
Bootleg poll.
Yeah. Bless you, Tom. I laughed. And
did vote. I think it's unlikely or something.
Yeah, I think I did. I think I did exactly the same. Or maybe I did. Shut up, Tom. But either way, Tom Curry's poll was hilarious. So if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. If you like taking part in groups and talking about just comics in general, whether it be publishing, going to conventions, etc., then sign up for the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review. I don't think we've had a review for a little while.
No,
And we're shameless whores for attention.
So. I don't use iTunes too much anymore, so I don't really get to see that.
No, I've moved over to Spotify purely because my iTunes was playing up. But we're on Spotify as well, folks. So you can find us there as well.
Yeah.
As well as like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Dan?
Pod Bollock.
That's the only network you use, isn't it?
We've definitely used that before, but it's a classic.
It is a classic. If in doubt, go with a bollock. Thank you again for listening. Where can people find us online, etc.? Dan.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yes.
I've working on a page. It's going to go up on Friday next week, and it's really gruesome. So stay around for that.
Lovely. Lovely. I hope it's a villain getting mashed up. I don't think I could deal with anyone.
It
like
is.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. You can find out more about my comic at theredmouseformmars.com, and you follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. You can find Tony Esmond at Ezo Yes on Twitter, and please check out his blog Never Iron Anything.
He's been putting a ton of reviews up, and they're great.
Yeah.
So he did a lovely piece about writing and character voices earlier in the week, and it got quite a bit of traction. That's worth reading that.
Yeah. Even though like we give him shit, and but he puts up some genuinely great content. So neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. Is that right? Yeah, I think it is, isn't it?
I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that there's a link in the show notes. So go check that out anyway. And thank you very much again to Good Comics for joining us. Go check out their work. And looking forward to all the stuff they've got coming over the next year or whatever. And we hope to see them at a show. And we hope to see you at a show. And we hope that you check us out next week. So go forth.
We've got quite a few con appearances in May.
Oh, no.
General appearances, yeah.
May's going to be hellish. So we might not do so many guests in May. It might just be us going... I can't. Yeah, so it might be that. So, but stick with us because it will be always entertaining. And thank you for listening from Dan, Tony, and myself. Have a brilliant week. Read loads of cool comics. Let us know what you think. And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
I love it every time. Gets me every time.
See we're going to get a big crowd one. Yeah, 200 definitely.
Oh yeah, god yeah. Well, I hopefully we'll get a crowd to do it. Otherwise that'd just be,
I want the people down to think, what are those doing out there?
I'm going to kill you for that. Bye everyone.
See ya.
Fucking wanker.
I wasn't planning that. It just came.
I'll tell you what, your natural dialogue is atrocious. It's always when you relax that you just drop a C-bomb every time.